Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host. A Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of OT practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. Get a dose of inspiration as you listen to these up-close conversations with fellow OTs sharing about their work, describing their paths, and how they apply their secret OT sauce in these uncommon settings. I invite you to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening, friends. So today, I am super excited to introduce you to not just one, but three guests of honors. I'd like to welcome Jace Sulit, Laura Burnett, and Leah Palowan to the show. They are occupational therapists who work in therapeutic climbing. With CACS, Canadian Adaptive Climbing Society, they run therapeutic programs that aim to use climbing to address physical, cognitive, emotional, and social aspects of the participant's rehabilitation journey. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you our guests, Jace, Laura, and Leah. Welcome to the podcast, ladies.
Thank you.
Hi.
Thank you. We're so excited.
Hi, welcome. I'm so excited to hear more about your uncommon OT work. But as usual, before we dive in, I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit about yourselves. You know, like what motivated you to participate in the podcast and, you know, maybe even touch upon what drew you to this type of work.
Sure, maybe I'll start. This is Jace. So I was a neuro rehab OT working for about 6 years until I had a spinal cord injury. That had me join Spinal Cord Injury Ontario. And then when I moved to BC for a few years, I joined Spinal Cord Injury BC. And being a member of that organization, I got to try out all kinds of adaptive sports. And it being BC, all kinds of outdoor adaptive sports. And one of them was climbing. And so that's when I first met CACS. It was while I was out in BC, got to do some indoor and outdoor climbing, experience its benefits. And it just so happened when I moved back to Toronto, Brent Goodman, the director of CACS, was like, I'm going back to Toronto to do some training at some gyms. I'm like, yeah, why don't you stay at my place if you need a place to stay? So he's staying with me and my partner. And we're talking about like, you know, we could like make this accessible to people in Ontario. How would we do that? And then that was just the start of it. And 4 years later, here we are with the program.
Oh, I love that. Ah, thanks for sharing.
My name is Laura. So I first got into climbing when I was living out in BC. I got to do some outdoor climbing and learned how to climb out there and got really interested in it. And the occupational therapy program in Toronto actually brought me back to Ontario. And after the OT program, I was looking for something to do and get involved with before we wrote our exam. And me and Leah actually graduated at that same time and reached out to CACS and actually found out that Jace was running a program. So we were really excited that there was an OT running a climbing program. And so we actually volunteered for the first program, and that was 3 years ago. And as Jace went on mat leave, we got to take over as the OTs. Been really exciting.
Oh, fantastic. So that's how the three of you connected.
Exactly. I'm Leah. So Laura told the first half. We graduated together in 2018, and we were looking for something to do. Laura and Jace connected, and she brought me along, and actually a couple other friends who ended up not continuing with us, but they were there in the beginning as well. And it was a strong team of Jace, the lead OT, and four recently graduated OT students, and we were super enthusiastic and excited. It was a really great way to start the program off. And the other thing that drew me to this and to continuing in this is the whole time through my OT program and through my life, I really loved the intersection of OT work in the nonprofit sector and the social sector. And that's where my strong affiliation with this is really lay. I had some climbing experience. I enjoyed it. But I just really like the idea of working in the community with people to break down barriers to things that they don't normally have.
I love it, because then that'll bring us to really the focal point of the show, which is like, why OTs, right? Why are OTs valuable in this type of work? And I also love, Leah, that you brought up the fact that, you know, you're new grads going into this type of work, right? It doesn't take a, I don't know, seasoned OT to do this type of work. And I think some of our listeners would be really happy to hear that. I heard you say the word enthusiasm.
Oh, yeah.
Jaysa, can you tell us a little bit about the enthusiasm that, you know, that exuded from these two that made you feel like they were the perfect sort of candidate for this type of work?
Oh, yeah. Like, I love, like, honestly, working with new grads for me is ideal because, yeah, they bring that enthusiasm, but they bring that keen, like, the keenness. And so, you know, just when that first year of Laura and Leah being there, they already, like, brought so many things that improved the program. Like, I didn't use any assessment tools, and so they brought in the COPM. It's the Canadian Occupational Performance Measure, and so, and you know, they helped adapt it for them. You know, they're the ones who brought in these beautiful graduation certificates for when people finish. Like, those are just two examples of things that they brought to the program. And yeah, it's, you know, it's definitely great to have key and new grad, but it's also Laura and Leah. Like, they're just, they volunteered their time for a year.
Yes.
A whole year. That's like, they volunteered for three programs, which is, you know, it's, yeah.
It says a lot about
their generosity. Yeah.
Yes. And again, to your passion, right? And doing this type of work. So, yay, so great to meet all of you. And thanks for sharing a little bit about, you know, what brought you to this type of work. Would any of you like to expand a little bit more about the, you know, the uncommon work that you do, the setting in which you provide the service, and the population that you serve?
I can maybe walk you through what our program looks like. So we run out of a climbing gym, and they've been a really great partnership with us. They've been really good at allowing us to grow our program and use their facilities.
That's True North Climbing Gym.
True North Climbing Gym in Northwick. Yeah. So the program looks like a 6-week program. We get people interested by, or kind of get people to come out and try the program through a free try it session that's sponsored by companies in the community. And they come out, try it for free, which really takes the pressure off of them. They don't have any financial burden on that. And we get to know the client, what their needs are, what their goals are, and see if they're a good fit for the program. And if we feel, and if they are ready to start the program, then we get them onto the 6-week program. Leah, do you want to talk about what the 6 weeks look like?
Yeah, absolutely. So like Laura said, it runs for 6 weeks. We typically try and run it the same time. We've been running the same time, sorry, every session. So we run Monday mornings. It's a great way to start the week. Everyone always says that, you know, staff, volunteers, participants, everyone's always like, wow, I used to hate Mondays and now I don't.
I love that.
Yeah. And so the first week is kind of like another try it session. The staff and volunteers are getting to know the participants, because not every staff or volunteer is at every try it session. So you're just getting to know who you'll be working with. And then one OT or two will pull each participant at a time while they're taking breaks from the wall and do the assessment. So I think we kind of alluded to that, but that involves the Canadian Occupational Performance Measure modified to help us set collaborative goals in terms of their physical goals, their climbing, technical climbing goals, as well as goals surrounding mindfulness and body awareness, because that's a huge part of our program too. And that's really been headed up by Jaysa. So each session, I should back up, each session starts with like a 5 to 10 minute mindfulness, usually around 5 minutes, mindful breathing, a body scan, Jace has been really focusing on self-compassion lately, which I think is a huge, important theme with the population we work with, because typically they're recovering from an injury and trying to get back to activities that they previously enjoyed or trying to find activities that they can do in their new selves. So that's week one. And then the following weeks, the participants will be paired up with a staff or volunteer that'll help address their goals. In week three, we give everyone a belay lesson so they can learn how the ropes work. And we allow them or encourage them to bring a support person, typically someone who they'll be climbing with in the community after mm-hmm. the program, as that is the goal, to get them climbing independently following the program. So we always say, bring someone you would probably climb with so you can learn to belay each other. So that's always in week three. Week four is typically midway point. We do a check-in on how we're reaching our goals that we set in the beginning. And then the last half, which we're in right now, actually in our current program, is just working with the clients on their remaining goals and, working on whatever they want to work on for the last few weeks. And then week six is a wrap up. We do a reassessment of the goals we originally set, as well as, I should mention, we do a self-esteem, the Rosenberg self-esteem assessment at the beginning and the end as well. And just a And then the graduation ceremony, like Jason talked about, where we give out little certificates.
Oh, wow. Sounds like an incredible 6 weeks. How long is it each week, each weekly session?
2.5 hours.
So 2.5 hours.
10 to 12:30 if we're getting specific.
Okay. So morning, right? Like starting out your morning. Okay, great. Thanks for sort of like laying out the structure of the 6 weeks. Can you give us some examples of goals that you might address?
So like Leia said, we try and break down their goals into physical, mindfulness, and what am I missing?
Technical climbing skills.
Technical climbing skills, right.
Is that where body awareness falls in?
So that would be under mindfulness or technical climbing skills. Generally, like climbing is such an inherently mindful activity because you're focusing on your body on the wall. And so we kind of put it under that category. Sometimes physical goals are like increasing grip strength or increasing strength or balance.
Balance is a huge one with our spinal cord injury clients. That's a really typical one we find in that population, especially because the mats are unstable because they're soft. Mm-hmm. So a lot of our participants talk about that, about how having to walk on those mats is actually an exercise in balance itself.
Itself, exactly. It's core work. Oh, got it.
Sorry, Laura, go ahead.
No, that's great. Mindfulness, I think a lot of people's goals, like you said, are body awareness. So taking those moments to kind of get out of your head. And when you're climbing, sometimes people are nervous. It's new. You're at a certain height. So taking that moment and that breath to pay attention to where your body is in space. Some people have paresthesia or want to focus more on their footwork. They're more hand focused or upper body focused. So that's some goals that we work on. Or sometimes just breathing and staying in the moment. Jace is really great at going around and talking to participants about that. And I think that it's a great way to teach mindfulness because it's so functional versus going and doing like a mindfulness session. Some participants are not as stoked to do that. Whereas yes. If we incorporate it into a functional activity, they really get it.
Exactly, I love that too.
And climbing goals, they can range. Sometimes it's just getting to the top of the wall. Sometimes it's getting up certain routes or grades.
Sometimes it's working beyond the use of a certain adaptive equipment that they start off using, like the counterbalance or a grip hook. They say by the end of the 6 weeks, I no longer want to have to use this piece of adaptive equipment.
Okay, got it.
That's something that's cool too, and we put that in climbing skills. We also have an opportunity to set other goals that are outside those categories. And I do think that that's been a big one in the past couple of sessions. Our clients with brain injuries, a lot of them have identified socializing as a huge goal for them. I also think that's maybe an effect of the post-pandemic world where they didn't get a lot of opportunity to do that.
Yes.
But that's been a pretty consistent goal with a few of our brain injury clients recently. Is just socializing and meeting, you know, people with similar injuries or different injuries, but getting to know new people is
who have the same interest.
Yeah, and right? It seems
kind of like what you and I would do if we were to just go out there and hang out. Okay, great. So, gosh, I have a lot of questions going on in my head. The first thing that came to mind was kind of like safety, right? You talked about the grip hook, and I was like, whoa. Everyone, and I'm sure it's hard to talk about sort of like, well, maybe there are sort of just general safety principles that you can describe for us, because I know everyone has such different needs, like someone with a TBI compared to someone who may have sort of like limited, you know, movement or strength.
Yeah, maybe this is a good segue to talk about our counterbalance system. So that's one way. So our counterbalance system is basically a way for us to take off some of the climber's weight. And so what it looks like is, let's say you're climbing, so you have a rope attached to you, going to the belay bar at the top, coming down and attached to the person belaying you. So that's what regular root climbing looks like. But with a counterbalance system, there's another rope attached to your harness that goes up to the belay bar. But then instead of coming down to another belay person, it's attached to a chair or like a sling chair where there's like a staff sitting. And that staff sitting is taking off some of your weight. Okay. So there's a way that we loop the rope so that it could take off half your weight, a quarter of your weight. And so how that is a safety feature for us is, so let's just say that there's somebody who's climbing with very weak or very uncomfortable arm, right arm, and they cannot, or it's not safe for them to pull their whole weight on that one arm. Mm-hmm. So the counterweight system will allow them to use that arm without using all their weight.
Okay.
And similar,
you can also
with
adjust.
Resting.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, and that's a way that we can grade it so that we're starting off. So we present it in a way where, you know, it could easily be perceived as like, oh, I'm cheating. I'm not really climbing because I'm using this adaptive system. But we always present it as a way to grade your activity. And like, this is actually a way to warm up. It's a way to get your body learning the movement first. Mm-hmm. So to really have it perceived as a positive way, as like, as it's an adaptive tool, right?
Yes. Not as an assist necessarily, right? But just
one of the main values of CACS is that people are working for each ascent. Like, you're not being lifted. You're using your body for every climb.
Yes.
And so whether, you know, somebody is limited by pain or fatigue, the counterbalance is a great way to support someone so that they can climb within their limits for that day as comfortable as possible.
And then in terms of additional safety measures, all of our staff and volunteers are trained up like in the belaying systems and all the rope systems we use. We generally have, it's like an unofficial policy that you do have to have some climbing experience to volunteer with us. And then there's also mandatory training that the volunteers go through. And then in terms of, you know, emotional safety and all of that, we really work to create a safe space where people feel like they can communicate their needs. We're constantly checking in. That's a huge, huge value of ours, as well as pacing is taught to every single one of our clients. Breaks are encouraged. The great thing about doing the group setting is, you know, it doesn't just feel like sitting around waiting for your next climb. You go cheer on another participant, and you go watch, you know, what someone else is learning. And that's a really great part of it. And it also encourages, you know, mutual encouragement and, you know, cheering each other on. So, you know, our safety protocols are built into just the pace of our entire program.
Yeah. So great, you guys. I love that you're incorporating, you know, all aspects of safety and not just physical safety, right? And sort of like, oh, the insurance sort of requirements of things. But they're your,
we do
your
have that pro- yeah.
You do, yes. I had a feeling you did. Yeah. And not to, you know, now that that's less important, right? They're mm-hmm. all very important, but sometimes the other pieces get forgotten. So I love that that's highlighted in yours and, in fact, encouraged, right, from a variety of different levels. So I want to hear a little bit more about that, because later I want to talk about, I want to have one of you maybe tell us a little bit about a typical session, right, with someone, a typical goal that you might have with someone, and how that might look like. But before we do, would any of you like to share? I know Laura and Leigh, you already talked a little bit about finding Jaysa and that sort of being your bridge into doing this type of work. Is there anything else that you can share with our listeners about how you got to being an OT, doing adaptive climbing, anything about your path to this, you know, to this journey that, you know, you can share with our listeners?
I think for me, when I reached out to CACS, it was just that, like, I was interested in climbing and I enjoyed climbing myself, and I could see the therapeutic benefits of climbing and using OT principles in that setting. And I was really interested in using OT outside of the typical, like, clinic and hospital setting. I think that when we can apply OT skills and interventions in more of a functional, laid back setting, I think it can be really beneficial for clients participating in the program. And yeah.
Yeah, I'll piggyback off of that. Throughout the whole program, like our master's program, our 2-year master's, we had 4 placements plus like a couple intro ones. And I never vibed with the conventional placements. And I remember having conversations with, you know, Laura and I belong to the same group of friends, being like, I don't even know if I want to be an OT. Like, I don't like the hospital. I don't, you know, I don't like any of these places that OTs are supposed to work. And it was really lucky that Laura found Jaysa and that I got to, you know, piggyback along to this adventure, because it really was I had encountered unconventional OT in, you know, in nonprofit settings, and we did an international placement, but it seems so simple that you could apply OT to something that so many people get to enjoy and use that to allow so many more people to get to enjoy it. I don't know if that makes as much sense as it does in my head, but yeah, that made me really excited and has opened the door for me to explore other options of alternative OT. And it's been really great in that way.
Thanks for sharing that. And again, for a lot of our new grads out there, right, to really give you that inspiration. And, you know, here's an example for you.
Sorry, I just want to add to that point. Shout out to any new grads listening. Use your placements if you can to explore those alternative settings, because you can always get a hospital job and you can always get, you know, a quote unquote conventional OT job by applying the hard skills that you learn. But like, use that time to explore other modalities of OT.
Yes.
My advice.
And I kind of want to add to that too, that you can do both. Right?
Yes.
You can have a hospital job and then also do that on the side just to sort of explore, right? It doesn't have to be like a whole diving right in. So, yes.
One of our OTs does that. Oh, two. Laura, you do that. Sorry.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. And it's a nice complement to hospital work. I think like that balance of working in both settings has been really valuable in learning skills in both places.
Yes, because they're both very different types of settings, but then your knowledge kind of extends to both, right? And it's kind of fun when you do something in one setting that you're able to use in an entirely different setting, right? And it's just, yeah, I get these sort of light bulbs. And
well, Laura's and a hand OT, just to pump your tires for a sec. Laura's a hands OT, and we had 2 participants this program come in with spinal cord injuries, and they have like different orthotics on their hands that they use. And Laura just completely nerded out about it. It was awesome. Whoa, can I see that?
Yeah, it's really cool to see like orthotics and prosthetics used in different settings and trying to apply it functionally. Because I think in hand therapy, sometimes like it's done by physios and OTs, but what OTs bring are that functional aspect. So functionally, what can we help you do and address any barriers that you have because of that hand injury? So that's how we kind of differentiate us in that physio world. So it's cool to see it come into the climbing world as well.
Yes.
Oh, speaking of OT, just because we're like, it's an OT podcast. And what I did before this climbing program, so, you know, I talked about how I did neuro work before my accident, but after the accident, I couldn't do that stuff because of my physical limitations. So what I ended up doing was teaching mindfulness. So it was interesting because there was this 8-week mindfulness program at Bridgepoint Health. It's a rehab hospital here in Toronto. And originally it was taught by a physician and someone in chaplain. But when they found out I was trained, they're like, oh, if you're trained in this program, you got to come help out. So I volunteered for a couple sessions. And then it got to a point where, you know, I'm coming to team meetings and I'm charting and like, well, you can't be a volunteer charting about clients. So we need to create a position for you. But because the hospital is unionized, they couldn't create an OT position because then any other OT could get the position. So they created a facilitator role. So I did that role for about 2-3 years before I moved to Vancouver. Interestingly, after I left, they only have been hiring for OTs. So even though they're looking for, like, all kinds of people are applying for, you know, social workers, all kinds of professionals, but two other people have filled in my role since I left, and that position has only hired OTs. And so I feel like, not only are OTs, great at teaching mindfulness, because if you're going to practice mindfulness, you have to bring it into all of your activities of daily living. Mm-hmm. But that work that I did was very non-typical at the time. Like, you didn't normally see an OT teaching mindfulness groups. It was like whenever I did all my trainings or went around in the mindfulness world, there's a lot of like psychiatrists, psychologists, and maybe social workers, psychotherapists. But I'm now, like 6 years later, we are seeing all kinds of OTs for teaching mindfulness. But then fast forward to now with the therapeutic program, it's that work I did before definitely has paved the way for me to do what I'm doing now, because I'm still teaching mindfulness, but in a more fun and exciting way, not asking people to, you know, lie down and close your eyes for 30 minutes.
Yes. And it's actually really kind of blending in your OT skills, right? And also what you like to do. I mean, you found passion in climbing after a personal, you know, journey of yours. So, you know, I always think that when we're doing something that's close to our hearts, right, or that's really meaningful to us, and we're able to bridge that with our work, that's just, that's great for everyone involved, right?
That's the client. Goal.
Yeah, that's the goal. So I love that you all have found each other, and that, you know, because of the shared passion, like, that's, you know, that's really, they're all making little heart, heart, what are these called? Heart shapes with their hands, for just our listeners are, you know, in on the inside joke. But I love that, because it sounds like you guys have a really great cohesive team. Everyone has the same sort of mission and personal values that really, I'm sure, makes this entire program even more effective for the people that you serve. So thanks so much for doing this work. We're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about, I guess, a little bit more sort of technical types of things, right? Again, for our listeners out there who want to get into this type of work. I know we talked about services that you offered. Can you talk about, I guess, how do you get reimbursed? What sort of funding or salary information, money matters that you can share with us?
So we're technically independent contractors working for CACS. That's how we are. That's how our compensation is structured. So we, every year, typically, we mutually agree upon the rate. And we actually have two rates that we invoice for. We charge a rate for direct OT work. And that's a slightly higher rate than any other work we might be doing. So like anything social media or, you know, like a presentation wouldn't have to be done by an OT, but is just because we're on the team, we call it an admin rate. So it's slightly lower. and we just track our hours and submit our invoice to the company. The way that the organization gets money to pay us is through either insurance. So a lot of our participants are motor vehicle accident survivors. So they have access to rehabilitation money. In Ontario, it's private, so everyone's is different. But so we'll put in a treatment plan on the Ontario insurance database, and that has to be approved by their adjuster, their insurance adjuster. So we put in like a letter of support that cites research and talks about what our program is. And, you know, we sometimes get on the phone with adjusters too, just to further elaborate on what we would be doing. So assuming that all goes well, that client is approved to participate, and then we have access to that funding that we've quoted the insurance. And those without insurance, we have a pay out of pocket rate. That's typically, it's a set amount. We do offer sliding scale if needed, because we think everyone should have the opportunity to participate. But typically it is one set amount, and our clients or participants have no trouble meeting that. Okay. So those are the two main funding streams. We also sometimes get WSIB, which is
Workplace Safety Insurance Board. It's like a workers' compensation.
Workers' compensation. That would be the equivalent in the U.S. Okay.
Yeah, workers' comp funding too. We haven't had too many of those, just because we just haven't had too many of those participants. But yeah, that's typically our funding stream. So as far as the nonprofit goes, we're a money in, money out, like we're kind of a break even situation.
Okay. And you're accepting donations and such?
Yes. We are always accepting donations to Canadian Adaptive Planning Society.
Okay. So where do you usually get your referrals?
So generally, so we have all sort of worked in the MV or motor vehicle accident world. And so we do have connections in the community where we partner or get referrals from OTs or case managers working with a client after motor vehicle injury. So a lot of our referrals are from community, like private OT companies or rehab companies. We've also reached out to associations like the brain injury associations in the community. We actually have an upcoming program where we're doing a partnership with Brain Injury Association of York Region. It's a long name. where we're running a program just for them. So that's a way that we get referrals as well. When we get a referral, we generally say, come out to a try-it session, and we hold these free try-it sessions about once every few months.
Between
programs. So that's how we, because climbing is a bit intimidating and some people don't really know how it would apply to them or if they can even get up on the wall or if it's something that they want to do. So we have some great sponsors, and Jason was a big influence in getting those sponsors on board, and they have been awesome. Usually representatives come out to the try-it sessions and check out the program. They're often a source of referrals as well.
Great.
So we can offer those sessions for free. So it's like a non-commitment, no financial commitment from the participant to come try it out. Yes. And then that's how we introduce the program and get them to come out to the 6 weeks.
Great. Are you able to share, and I know it would be in Canadian dollars, but what is the cost out of pocket for a typical 6 week program?
Out of pocket at this moment for our group sessions, it's for just under $800 Canadian.
Okay.
Really, it's not much because
that's Canadian dollars.
Yeah. Given that, you know, you're having 2.5 hours a week with an OT and you have free rentals and access to this gym, and it includes a membership afterwards for a month. So they can come back and climb and like use those skills that they learned. And then after that, it's on them if they want to continue climbing, and that's out of their pocket. But it's incredibly affordable. We work hard to keep it that way. The gym that we work with also is extremely reasonable in their pricing with us, which makes a huge difference too.
Mm-hmm.
Typically the out-of-pocket price that we charge is, I think, $775.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Helpful to know, just in terms of, you know, again, other OTs out there who are thinking of structuring their own pricing plans, right?
Mm-hmm. When we charge insurance, sorry, I just want to explain, it's a bit more just because it takes a bit more admin time. Mm-hmm. So our treatment plan ends up being slightly higher when it's charging directly to insurance or workers.
And I guess, you know, as far as charging insurance, is that here in the US, that's always a challenge on any level. How is it in Canada in terms of getting reimbursed? Is there, do you have issues, or is this something that you always have to fight for, or is it pretty smooth sailing?
So we won't start a participant who will be getting insurance funding without getting the approval already from the insurance. And that is, the approval is a commitment from the insurance that they're going to pay it. So typically most adjusters have ended up approving it. A common occurrence when we're putting in treatment plans is an initial denial followed by us bothering them a lot and explaining ourselves and explaining
a dispute.
Dispute, yeah, exactly. Appeal. Explaining why it would be beneficial. Sometimes we'll get someone on their direct care team. So, you know, their personal OT or their case manager or their physio who has already had a pre-existing relationship with the adjuster to speak on our behalf too, to advocate for the client and why this would be beneficial for their recovery. And I would say 9 times out of 10, it turns into an approval.
Okay.
In Ontario, when you have when you're injured in a car accident, you have access to a certain amount of funding depending on the severity of your injury. So often we go through that, it's called the medical rehabilitation like funds. Mm-hmm. So that's the insurance that we're going through versus like, or the workplace insurance. Okay. Versus like the provincial insurance.
Yes. And I guess, you know, another quick question, and I'm sorry, I keep like kind of sidetracking to these questions, but you know, they can go to a typical rehab setting, typical outpatient clinic, you know, what would make a client choose to go climbing versus, you know, doing rehab in a climbing gym versus a clinic, right? But do you have to often convince your reimbursers that, you know, this is just as valid as going to a regular clinic? In fact, probably more meaningful.
Yeah, well, just as Leah had mentioned earlier, that we write a letter of support. And in that letter of support, we actually cite research supporting both the benefits of rock climbing and the benefits of mindfulness, because we are posing this as a mindfulness program as well, mindfulness mm-hmm. in motion. And so, yeah, it's very hard to deny a letter that says, here's the research supporting that this program is going to help meet this client's needs in this way. And when the referring person is also supporting the benefits of this program, yeah, that's why we've had that 9 out of 10 approval
yes.
rate. Yeah, so we heavily rely on the science and the research to have it be approved.
Congrats for the work that you're doing and also for supporting the work that you're doing to the point where you're getting reimbursed for it 9 out of 10 times. That's incredible. I think that deserves, you know, some kudos. And you know, I think
I want to shout out.
We're doing snaps.
shout out, I guess, to we've had now 2 students. We had 1 student last year and we have a student now who do a lot of that, you know, hard work behind the scenes of finding new literature and creating, you know, documents or analyzing our program, whatever we need them to do, that does make our work easier and allows us to, you know, stay on top of current evidence and stuff like that. So it takes a village.
Yay, shout out to those students and all students out there doing the same thing, right? I think that's just really like the beauty of these OTD programs too. On this note, I know you touched upon, you know, this a little bit, Jason, but you know, OTs are well suited for adaptive or therapeutic climbing. Can you tell us why?
I think just, you know, reiterating the fact that we have the skills and the ability to work within a scope of practice that addresses mind, body, and spirit. Social, you know, I know some people put social in your spirit, but yeah, just for that fact, and because we have that mind, body, social, spirit lens, we can look at the act of climbing and see how it addresses clearly mind, body, social, spirit goals. Like, it's just, you know, it's hard to be an OT and take your glasses off. You're just, you know, once you're an OT, you're just walking around and you're just being like, okay, meeting all the goals. Like, it's, yeah.
I get it. I call them my OT glasses. They're on my head permanently.
Yeah.
But yes, thank you for, you know, kind of tying that together for us.
And I will just say, like, mm-hmm. one example of like the ideal success story, like, obviously everybody's goals are different, but if we're looking at meaningful occupation, and again, reiterating, meaningful occupation is different for everybody, but we are seeing that there is benefit to occupations where you are in connection with to yourself and another person, so shared meaningful occupation. So what that looks like is, once you graduate from the program, you can continue climbing with someone else. And so we had one client who, for the third week belay session, he brought his son in, then they learned how to belay each other. And then after he graduated the program, we were on to our next season of our 6-week cycle, and we'd see our graduating client with his son climbing at the gym. So I think that's like a wonderful, you know, OT goal. Here's someone who can now discover a new meaningful occupation that he can share with his son.
Yes.
So that's, you know, from an OT, we're really seeing the meaning behind that kind of goal achieved.
I'll also say that a huge part of, you know, any rehab, like any rehab program where you are making gains and you're working hard, is there's a huge psychosocial component. And as OTs, we have that, you know, the OT lens of like, you know, environmental modification, and how can we get you doing this physically and like get you bodily engaged in it, but as well support you through, you know, whatever emotions you're going through. Like, we've had people cry on the wall. We've had people get really frustrated because they didn't do as well as they thought they would. Like, we've had across the spectrum, like a lot of emotion, cry of happiness, I should have said in the first example, you know. And so I think that's another part of it, Jason, to add on to what you said, is the emotional, the psychosocial support that OTs are so well trained in, is a huge part that you wouldn't think of just doing a recreational sport, but it is.
Even recognizing the need for that psychosocial support, right? Not all clinicians have that lens, so I think we do.
I agree.
Great. So there you go. OTs, therapeutic climbing, you're perfect for it. So any career advice for any of our listeners who want to kind of follow down the same path that you've just gone, that you'd like to share? I know you've already given snippets here and there. Anything else you'd like to share?
Oh, I have one right away off the bat, and it's all about relationships. Like, your relationships with everyone, your OT classmates, your teachers, every coworker you've ever worked with, it is so important. So this program wouldn't be if it weren't for the networks I made. So, you know, I last told you how I came back to Toronto, and, you know, Brent Goodman, the director of CACS, came and he's like, let's figure out how to make this happen. Our first step, you know, our first step was meeting with Kate, our current director in Ontario. Kate, myself, and Brent, we're like, what are we going to do? We invited everyone I've ever known in the MBA world, like social workers, rehab therapists, physios, OTs, assistants. And we did a community workshop, and we had everybody come to True North Gym, and we said, hey, we want to make climbing accessible to everybody. And we proposed different ideas. We're proposing one-on-ones, and it was the community. It was the network that I fortunately had kept that said, you need to do a program. Try 6 weeks, because that's what's going to work with funding. Like, I originally was thinking one-on-one. So, and then from there, because of the networks that I maintained, I was able to get my old case manager, my old lawyer, my old physio to be our current main sponsors. And yeah, everything is all about relationships. I think in any industry you're in, it's all about relationships. So maintain them, obviously with integrity, not because you're using people, but mm-hmm. out of the mere, you know, benefit of being in healthy connections with people. Like, it will benefit you personally and professionally.
Yes. And obviously having the same kind of mission, right? And the same ideas for, you know, providing something good for people out there. Exactly. So thanks, Jaysa. I'm such a fan of yours and your networking skills. Holy moly. Super impressive.
Everybody knows Jaysa. I've posted Jaysa in my Instagram, my personal Instagram before, and I've gotten messages being like, how do you know Jaysa? I love it.
But yeah, and that's such an important message also for our listeners, right? And that comes up time and time again. Networking, networking, networking. You'll just never know whom you'll interact with, who will be, you know, vetted in the same types of passions that, you know, you have, right? Mm-hmm. So thanks for sharing that. Any other career advice, Leia or Laura?
Probably along the same lines, just reaching out to people and making those connections in the first place.
So you volunteered in the beginning. How did you find, did you just Google? How did you find Jaysa?
I don't remember what I Googled, but I think I was looking at adaptive climbing programs, or I'd heard about them and in some way, shape or form, and just decided to reach out and say, hey, do you need any volunteers? And I think volunteering is a great way to make those connections. And if it's something that you're interested in, explore that in a way that you can offer your time or skills. And it was just really lucky timing. And sometimes you can have that scenario where you just email at the right time and you can get involved. And yeah.
May I ask what was your volunteer commitment?
So me and Leah volunteered for that once a week commitment, 2.5 hours. So we came once a week, and at the time we were waiting to write our OT exam. So we had the time. We were just studying. I think we maybe began to work after the second program. So we were making it balance with our work. And that's why I think some of our friends couldn't do that, because they got more 9-to-5 positions. But we made it work, which was awesome. And again, something that we were really excited that we could make work.
Yes. And then there's now you're seeing the fruits of your volunteer labor.
Mm-hmm. I have two. My first one being, if an opportunity falls in your lap, like your friend texts you saying, I found a really cool adaptive climbing program to volunteer at, take it. Absolutely take it. Because you never know where it's going to lead. And, you know, opportunities don't always come that easily to engage in whatever you might find cool and interesting. So that is my one piece of advice. Might sound obvious, but it's not always. And then my second one is similar to what Laura said, is reach out and ask the people who are already doing it. So we have, Jaysa was talking about Brent Goodman. He's the director of CACS. The original CACS started in BC. And so he has his own team as well. And as well as our board, is made up of all of his network, and has amazing connections in the climbing world as well. And they're now looking to start their own OT program. And so the OT he's found reached out to us, and we've had multiple meetings and talks about what we're doing. She's going to be doing things slightly differently, and that's good for us to know, and we can compare notes and all that. So I think, reach out to people who are already doing it.
Congrats. You've set the tone. You're paving the road, right? People are reaching out to you because you've done the work, and they want to see what's worked and what has not, right? And try something. So
I think it's important to note, maybe Leah or Laura, you can say where our program is at now, because people reached out and our program has grown.
Please brag away.
So we now have an additional 2 OTs on board. And Leia was mentioning previously how we kind of have 2 different OT rates. And so now we've actually gotten to the point where we can have a lead OT and a second OT, which is really cool. And it's a really cool way to bring OTs on board and grow our team and hopefully grow the amount of programs that we do.
That's the goal. This is the most amount of enrollment we've ever had in a program. We have 7 participants coming every week, which is amazing, because when we were starting out, it was 1, 2, 3. And which was awesome for the participants because they got all our attention. But
yes,
it is equally awesome to have so many. And we have some long-term volunteers who are just incredible. Jason, if you don't mind me saying, her partner, TJ, has been volunteering as long as Laura and I have. And he's wonderful and basically an honorary OT at this point and has really valuable insight into climbing as he worked with Jasa through her recovery and climbing too. And mm-hmm. Anyway, all that to say is we have this amazing strong team and it's growing all the time. We have a peer mentorship program we're working on where past participants come out and volunteer and help lead the program and climb with new participants. And we're also starting new program structures. So we just guinea pigged. I don't know. We just
trialed out piggybacked
our first one-on-one 6-week program. And so that's wrapping up right now. And that went really well too. That was just because he wasn't available to come to the time and place of the group program. So yeah, I mean, and we're developing other services that people are asking for. Like they don't necessarily want to come in for the 6 weeks, but they do want to meet with one of us to create goals and talk about what adaptive equipment they might use or what strategies they could use to help them climb in the gym independently or with their rehab therapist or whatever it is. Anyway, we could talk all day about this. We're so excited. But yeah, so we have a lot going on, a lot in the works, and it's been really exciting. And yes. We were a little bummed when COVID, you know, we felt like it a little dampened our momentum that we had been building, but I think it's fully back if you guys
it's
agree.
Back. I was wondering, did you have to take like climbing outside or was that more challenging with the counterbalance, you know, safety systems out there in the wild?
We did take climbing.
Okay. Yeah, we actually, someone who's a peer mentor in our program right now, he was a climber before his accident and came and did a 6-week program with us indoors, but hadn't yet been able to return to outdoor climbing. And so this year we were able to do an outdoor program with him.
A shortened one.
Yeah. Because we were still navigating COVID and gyms were kind of opening and closing. Yes. We were able to go outside and that was really awesome. We did a try it session outdoors. So people got to come and try it. Our Ontario director, Kate, is a climbing guide. So she's been a huge resource in keeping us safe and helping set up the systems outdoors.
It also reduces costs on us because we can once again use our own team as our guide outdoor, and you know she has the equipment. Yeah. So it just feels a bit too good to be true sometimes.
And it's nice to have an option, I guess, right? I know you're doing everything in the gym, but then to have sort of like an outdoor option at some point. Oh wow! So. Congrats on all the stuff. I want you guys back on the show. I'm not even going to ask if you mind coming back on, but I want you back on to hear more about, you know, just your growth and where this is going. Congrats on having on board other OTs who are going to get to have similar experiences like you in their, you know, day-to-day work life. That's pretty incredible. And just for your growth and you know, the how your service is being received there. Are there any common myths or misconceptions that you would like to demystify for our listeners about the type of work, the type of uncommon OT work that you do?
I think one, maybe not related to our OT work, but a lot of questions we get from referrers or clients is just thinking that they can't climb or that they won't be able to go to a gym and climb or won't be able to climb outdoors. And that's, I think, a big part of what we want to do is show people that they can climb. It might look a little bit differently. They might have different goals, but that has been something that's been really cool to see when people come to the try it sessions and they're like, oh, I can do this.
Absolutely anyone can climb. That's quite literally the mission statement of the CACS organization is anyone can climb. Everyone can climb.
Can one of you talk us briefly through a typical session, what this climbing activity might look like, and what a goal, what a typical OT goal, or I guess one of the goals would fall under one of the categories that you talked about, right? You choose.
I could use an example from a program or a participant that we have in this program. So she has a brain injury and a frontal lobe injury. And the first time she came out to a triad session, she was really excited and was really excited to actually come down off the wall and thought she was going to do great. But then once she got on the wall, you get kind of nervous. You're up on the wall, very heavy, fast breathing, a little bit difficult. She had a bit of difficulty like coming down off the wall, just getting over that fear. Her rehab support worker that was with her at the triad session actually convinced her to come join the program. So she didn't really, she wanted to be there, but she needed some convincing. And some of her goals in the program have been to work on that body awareness and breathing. So at the beginning of the climb, we'll say, okay, let's take a deep breath before you climb and maybe plan the route a little bit. So a little bit of planning. And then when you're up on the wall, taking breaks. So a lot of pacing strategies are important. One of her goals was to do 10 climbs in 1 hour, and not necessarily something we talked to her about and talked to her about that goal and saying, how can we use pacing strategies to actually make sure that you're feeling okay the next day? So she was working on setting times for herself. And I don't know if anyone else wants to add anything, or give another example.
The example that you chose is a really good one. And I think session by session, she has, like you were talking about, Patricia, you take one small goal to help her get to her final goal, right? And so what Laura was talking about was she was super tense and wasn't breathing and was really scared on the wall. That also is contributing. She has pre-existing shoulder pain from her injury. So that the tenseness of her muscles was causing shoulder pain, and she was not thinking about properly using her arms on the wall, and she wasn't able to because she was so scared to fall off. So for example, one of the early sessions we did like fake falls, and we taught her about the rope system so that she wouldn't be afraid to fall off the wall and she could be more comfortable holding on to the holds. And then once she felt comfortable with that, we worked on her body positioning, just in terms of, you know, having straight arms instead of bent arms to help reduce shoulder tension and shoulder pain, and as well as remembering to breathe on the wall and encouraging her to take breaks when she wanted. And that was, so that was what another session looked like. And now fast forward, you know, she's flying up and down walls, and we're having to work on her pacing. So it's always something new, like what Laura was talking about, the 10 walls in an hour. I remember during her COPM, or whoever was doing it, I can't remember which one of us was doing it, just kind of said, are you sure? and then we had to talk to her about it. But
is a realistic amount typically for an hour, being a non-climber myself?
If she's sticking to the easy walls within her like range of not challenging things that she can already accomplish pretty easily, I would say she could maybe do 5 or 6. Would you agree, okay, Laura? And Lisa? Okay. Yeah. Okay. But yeah, so session by session, you kind of, like OTs do, break down big goals into smaller goals and address step by step each issue and help them get to the end. And it just naturally happens that most of our clients end up exceeding most of their goals. I'm not sure about this 10 climbs in an hour. We haven't finished the program yet, but I don't know if she's going to get that.
She's not done.
But because we set the goals in the first session when they haven't had much experience, maybe they've had a tried session and then half of one session because we're doing the assessment during the session. Yes. You know, they have no idea what they're capable of. And then they end up almost every time exceeding their expectations, at least in some of their goals, which is always exciting.
It's brilliant. You talked in the beginning about a self-esteem assessment that you conduct at the beginning and at the end. Can one of you share a little bit more detail about that?
I was the one who pushed for it, so I guess I'll take it. So our assessments are still ever-changing because we're still pretty new, and we're just trying to find what works best for us, like to help assess what the client needs, as well as have outcome data that is showing us what we're doing is working and significantly. Yes. Obviously, maybe not obviously, I shouldn't say that, but there's a lot of research around gaining a new skill directly being linked to higher self-esteem. So as well as our clients coming in with typically lower self-esteem because they've suffered this injury that's preventing them from engaging in XYZ, often sports that they used to do. And so, you know, and that typically affects what I've seen in my motor vehicle clients, not all the time, is when you can't do the activities that bring you joy, your self-esteem is just lower. So we had the idea of bringing in the Rosenberg self-esteem scale, which is it's a 10 question self-report questionnaire that gives a score out of, well, you know what, I'm not going to try because I can't remember off the top of my head, but it gives a score, a relative score of, and then we have them do that at the beginning and at the end just to see if we are producing clinically significant increases in self-esteem. The results are too early to tell. We only introduced it last session, and our lovely student Kayla is working on analyzing that data now. So ask us again next time you have us on. I'm sure we'll get more information on that. But yeah, that's what we thought it was important to take a look at, as well as mindfulness and getting in touch with their body can hugely contribute to self-esteem, just in terms of you know, the compassion that they hold for themselves and their own perception of their abilities and meeting themselves where they are, which is another huge theme that Jaysa always encourages, which is, I love that one. You know,
one of my favorite lines of Jaysa's is, oh, I'm going to get it wrong. where your attention goes, neural energy flows. Totally. And I think it's a big one with spinal cord injury participants that we have. Because it's just such like a cue for paying attention to what they want to and where they want that energy to go. So even on the climbs, making sure that we help them pay attention to where their foot placements are, or we use something called a traverse wall where they're not connected, but they are just going horizontally. So they really have to focus on their footwork and placing their feet in different positions. And if they have limited sensation or strength there, kind of like that phrase is helping them pay attention to that area.
So is that this mantra that you're always just saying all around the program, Jaysa?
No, I tend to say it during, not all around, but I do love saying it during our guided practices. Yeah, so maybe once a week.
Well, it sounds like they love it. So ladies, oh my goodness, what an enlightening conversation with the three of you. Thank you so much for teaching me and our listeners about OTs and adaptive climbing. I have no doubt that people are interested. And, you know, thanks for sharing with us your journey, your path, exactly the type of work that you're doing. And would you mind telling us how we can get in touch with you? Can we reach out if we had any questions and, you know, wanted to get into this type of OT work?
Yeah, I mean, the most direct way to get us, specifically the OT team, with like under the umbrella of the organization, is to email rehabteam@canadianadaptiveclimbing.com. So that's our email that we're checking, and that's how we correspond. If you're interested in generally what the whole organization does, at canadian.adaptive.climbing on Instagram, and as well a website that I believe is just canadianadaptiveclimbing.com, but if you Google it, it will definitely show up. And yeah, please feel free to email us with questions if you're interested in the OT side of things. We literally love to talk about it.
How about those who are interested in volunteering?
Same email, rehabteam@canadianadaptiveclimbing.com. I think we're working on a volunteer sign up portal. I think that's what we learned in the last national meeting, but that's not up yet. So I mean, when it is, we can share it with you, Patricia, if you want to put that out. That
would please be I have a feeling
now, for now just an email would suffice. We answer fast.
Yes, you do. So thank you so much again for sharing your stories, for schooling us a little bit about this super interesting and just fascinating type of work that you do.
Thanks for having us.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me
at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.